inside the feral zone.
Greetings, listeners. Welcome back inside the feral zone. I am Renee Coleman, operating under cover of darkness from an undisclosed location on Canal Street. Now, the Feral Zone is a sister podcast to the Troubled Men podcast. It appears in this space from time to time. This is a very special occasion. We have a guest who I can't remember the last time they were in New Orleans. It's been years and years. She and I go way back. She's a fantastic singer, guitar player, songwriter, band leader. She's played with bands such as Tav Falco's Panther Burns, her own band, the Hellcats, Alluring Strange, the Kropotkins. Also worked with Alex Chilton and Sonic Youth on various recordings. And she's coming back through town under her own name, playing at BJ's tonight on a great bill of four bands or so, all kind of in the Panther Burn Alex universe. So without further ado, the great Ms. Lorette Velvet. Welcome. Welcome, Lorette.
Hey, Renee. Thank you for quite an introduction.
Sure, yeah. We like to have the build up to the letdown, you know.
Yeah. I'm here for that.
Here for the letdown.
Yeah. Let's get started.
Okay. Well, so as I was saying, I haven't seen you, and I can't remember the last time you were in New Orleans. Was that like a Hellcats Panther Burn gig sometime, maybe at the CAC or something in the 90s?
I'm trying to remember. I do remember the first time I came down with Panther Burns, and it's when Annabelle, which this woman who was... I really had total respect for, because she put together this alternative underground performance night. She was hanging with Alex Chilton, and I was really impressed with what she did. I can't remember what it was. It was kind of this underground thing, maybe in a warehouse.
Oh, you know, we might have played like at the church or something. Was
yeah,
that
it could have been at a church.
Yeah, right. I know where you're talking about. Yeah, Annabelle Linderink.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so we've crossed paths with her a few years ago in California on the West Coast. She's doing like organic farming out there.
I kind of caught wind of that.
Right.
And I got, you know, so it gave me a lot of confidence to think that, well, let's do one of these in Memphis. Let's do something. And I talked to Tav on the way back, and it's like, let's do something like Annabelle did. And that's where Counterfest came about.
Okay.
And that was something we did in Memphis, usually in like a cotton loft downtown. And the first one, I remember we got different artists to build alternative environments that you could, interact with. Of course, we had bands play.
Right.
And that kept going. That Counterfest was that Memphis in May, which is a big commercial type venture that has all kinds of bands come and play in Memphis in May, and they honor a country. Well, a lot of the underground bands, of course, didn't get on that bill.
Right,
they weren't asked
right.
to play, and we felt like a lot of our fans were, we kind of lost out on our shows. Because no one would show up. Everyone's downtown at the Memphis in May Festival. So we did this Counterfest in counter to the Memphis in May Festival.
Well, you know, the people in Memphis always had, or at least the Panther Burn side of the freaks in Memphis always had a real self-starter kind of let's put on a show ethic to them.
Yeah.
They weren't waiting for someone else to call them up and give them a shot.
We had the spirit of Andy Rooney in us. That's for sure.
Andy Rooney, okay.
Yeah, he's put on a show.
Oh, right. Mickey Rooney.
Yeah. Andy, too, whoever he is.
Sure. I think he was the guy at the end of 60 Minutes who would come on and gripe for 2 minutes.
We had that too.
Sure.
We had our gripes for sure.
Well, let's go back a little bit, talk about where you're from. So you didn't grow up in Memphis exactly, did you?
I didn't grow up in Memphis. I grew up in Savannah, Tennessee. It's about 2 hours from Memphis. And really, the only connection that I had with Memphis was that my sister had to go to the dentist there.
Okay,
so the reason that my sister decided after she got out of high school where she was going to go, either Memphis or Nashville, she picked Memphis because she had been to the dentist there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I was still in high school when she went to Memphis, and she would call me and put the phone up to the radio so I could hear WEVL community radio.
Mm-hmm.
And hear the sounds that were coming out of there. They were playing a lot of the bands, local bands and other stuff. Also, there was a college station too, Southwestern.
Uh-huh.
Listening to that as well. So that's how I got to Memphis, was really through my sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you wound up going to college there. Is that correct?
I did. In high school, I started traveling over to Memphis. And once I got to be 16, I had my little Chevette.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go over to visit my sister, and I'd go to the Mid-South Coliseum to hear bands. Back then, I was into heavy metal.
Uh-huh.
And I saw Queen and AC/DC.
Okay.
And Van Halen.
Right.
And
right on.
All those bands, yeah.
Right. Now, the first time I met you, I was playing in the Panther Burns and kind of in and out of that band, playing with Alex with his trio.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the point where you came on the scene. And you know, I've had a whole bunch of people on this podcast or the Troublemen podcast that have connected a lot of these dots. You know, I've had Tav on the podcast. I had Alex Green on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
I had Brent Newman, Glenn Styler, played drums for a while in the Panther Burns, had him on the podcast, and I had Misty White.
Oh yeah,
on the podcast, and she kind of filled me in on so you kind of come into the Panther Burn orbit with, like, first you meet Misty, and explain how that goes down.
Well, it kind of revolves around the club in Memphis at the time called the Antenna Club.
Sure.
The world famous Antenna Club.
Right.
And my sister was taking me, my sister Sue was taking me there even before I was of age. I had a fake ID, and so I was going there for several years, a couple of years. And then, you know, I started to see that this band called Panther Burns was playing around town, and I saw, you know, I met Tav at the Antenna Club. And so, you know, we started hanging out, and you know, how things evolved.
Sure.
You end up in the band.
Right, right. Well, so when I first saw you, you were a normal-looking, you know, late teenage girl. You might have still had a little baby fat on you, you know, just, and I met you right when you first started hanging out with Tav, and some months went by before I was back in Memphis, because I always lived in New Orleans, but, you know, Alex and I would travel up there to play mm-hmm. Panther Burn gigs or do recordings. And somehow the next time I met you, you had made the full transformation from Lori to Lorette.
I did.
and
I certainly did.
Tav had you down to about 90 pounds.
Well, you know, there is a reason we call it the Gustavo diet. You know, I wasn't working, he wasn't working, and we ate tuna on dry toast with tap water. That was what we had.
Yeah, so not a high-fat diet.
No.
So next thing you know, you got full-blown Lorette Velvet and, you know, op art stockings, black and white op art stockings, and a tiny pink plastic miniskirt.
Yeah, you've got a good memory, Renee. Yes, I emerged.
and like fully formed. You know, I was like, wow, that was quick. How did you do that?
I was just waiting to blossom.
Okay, all right.
Yep.
Well, you know, it speaks to the potential of Tav and the Panther Burns just in general, the whole milieu, mm-hmm. to allow people opportunity to become not what they're destined to, but what they'd like to become, you know, it's an open book.
Yeah, you're right. It's opened a lot of doors for people to come out as anything they wanted to be.
Right.
The Antenna Club was like that as well, because we were, you know, it was before MTV, and Steve McGee, the club owner, was getting Rock America videos and showing those on all the video monitors in the club. So this is the first time we were seeing The Clash and Lydia Lunch and new wave bands, and things started changing quickly, because all of a sudden we're seeing how people are dressing in these different bands, and I noticed that really fashion started to really happen around the Antenna Club. And
right. This is probably like 1983 into 84.
Yeah.
And this is right when we'd started playing with Alex's trio out on the road. We'd gone up to New York, mm-hmm. and we'd met the photographer from New Rose Records, who put us in touch with Patrick Matte, the president of New Rose Records. And so that Panther Burns then got a deal also with New Rose, and mm-hmm, we're able to put out the Sugar Ditch Revisited record, which we had already recorded for the most, mm-hmm. Pretty much. Mm-hmm. But then Alex and I recorded, and Doug Garrison, who I'm coming up on my 40th anniversary of playing the very first gig with Doug Garrison.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Which is coming up in November 17th.
Right
around the corner.
Yeah.
We'd recorded that first record, then Panther Burn goes in and starts making a second LP, The World We Knew.
Yep.
And you wind up doing some background vocals on that record.
Yeah.
So now, mm-hmm. now I can't remember if the Shake Rag record had already been recorded, or did you appear on the Shake Rag record in some capacity?
You've got a better memory than I do. I think I probably was on all those.
Okay.
Up until 1990.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I think possibly maybe Shake Rag, but then for sure The World We Knew, you and I believe Lisa McGoffrin sang some background vocals on several tracks of that record.
That sounds right.
So that's when I'm first starting to be around you more, and we played some Panther Burn gigs, but I don't think you were really playing live with the Panther Burns at that point, or at least maybe not on the gigs that I played on.
Yeah, I eventually played, you know, came on as a tambourine player.
Well, so the
I got pretty good at that.
Sure. At some point, I left Alex's band, and I'm back playing in the Panther Burns, and I go out on a tour. And Tav is like, well, Lorette's going to come out on tour with us. And they're like, well, what's Lorette going to be doing on this tour? You know,
uh-huh.
It's like, well, you know, when I have her there, she'll play second snare drum and tambourine and vocals. And I'm like, oh, really? We're going to have somebody else out here on tour? You know, it's going to have to be a whole other hotel room and stuff, you know? And he goes, well, she's going to drive too.
Oh, yeah, I remember that tour.
So I think it was me, Brent Newman, you know, George Reinecke, Tav,
uh-huh.
and you as our driver and tambourine player and snare drummer.
I did it all.
And you drove every mile.
I drove every inch of that in a 15-passenger van.
All the way up to
Canada.
All the way up to Canada, all around Canada, all the way back down through D.C. And a lot of people saw us on that trip. That was a well-attended tour.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually seen a few videos of different performances on that tour, and the band sounds great. It was such a weird band.
Yeah.
and I got to really, really love having you on the band, having those two snare drums going and, you know, just your whole presence there, you know.
Oh, so you converted. You were very skeptical at first.
I was very skeptical, but but you know, as far as not you as a person, but you having you on the road as a functioning, you know, full-fledged member of the Panther Burns, like, I don't know, this seems like a cockamamie
idea. Yeah, I remember that tension because I was like, who is this bass player from New Orleans? He's really too refined for this band. He's a little snooty. I don't know about him. And then finally, I looked over after, 12 shows and looked over you. I was like, he's okay.
We won each other over. You know, it's like, being there in the trenches with people, you know who you can count on, you know. At some point, it's like, well, Lorette's tough as nails, man.
You gotta be.
Yes, yeah. And I remember, I think it was that same tour where at some point we'd been out there for a long time and, you know, we would only stop at like Howard Johnson's.
Yeah, the Hojo's.
The Hojo Rising. Because they had some kind of ice cream.
They had a milkshake.
But the special ice cream is like rum raisin ice cream or something. Uh-huh. That Tav loved that flavor. And I would always complain. It's like, what do you get at Howard Johnson's? And they said the clam roll.
Yeah.
You get a clam roll. And ice cream, that is so gross. but I do remember one specific time that Brent and I, who I still see Brent, you know, every couple of weeks, we're still very close. And Tav came out of the Howard Johnson's and he had like an ice cream and a clam roll. And you looked at him, you said, Tav, you didn't get anything for me? And he said, oh, I didn't know you were hungry, sugar babe. He's like, you want to buy the clam roll?
I'm like, hell no.
He's like, go back in there and get me some food right now. I'm like, oh, okay, baby.
Yeah, yep. That's the thinnest I ever was.
I'll bet. Yeah. You
I lived on, Diet Coke and cigarettes.
Well, I do remember the ubiquitous element. You always had the Marlboro Lights and a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And even we went to Europe after that, and they didn't have Diet Coke. They had Coke Light.
Yeah, I was really mad.
But it's the same thing, just a different name.
It didn't taste the
didn't
same.
Say, no, I'm,
you know, when I first went to Europe, though, I was smoking menthols, and they didn't have menthols. So what I did is I got Pall Malls, and I sucked on fisherman lozenges, and they created the same effect.
Illusion. Holy cow.
Creature comforts.
Right.
Being on the road.
While all this is going on, are you starting to develop the Hellcats? Was that the Panther Burns sister band?
It seemed like it started pretty quickly.
Okay.
And that kind of came about because, I don't want to get the story wrong, but I'll tell you what I remember.
Because you have some people in the Hellcats universe that are very real sticklers for detail.
I have historians.
Sure.
That I have to be real. Try to get the lore correctly because, I mean, you got to set the lore down. It's going to be that way forever.
Right, right.
No, but we started, Lisa McGochran and I started performing with Tav on guitar and bass as the Burnettes.
Okay.
And we did a few shows in Memphis. Tav was on guitar. I was on guitar. Lisa was probably on bass and guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who was drumming.
Do you have Ross Johnson playing drums?
Maybe it was Ross.
Maybe?
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe it was Ross. And so we started doing that, and we did some things down at. We were doing. Tav and I were doing this Club Cinema du Champ, which was his idea, obviously. Okay. But it was showing films on Sunday nights down at this Cotton Loft, where some of our friends lived. And he would check out films at the local library. And they were 16-millimeter films, some 8-millimeter films. And he would show things like The Blue Angel with Marlene Dietrich. Or he would show Pull My Daisy with the Beat Poets.
Mm-hmm.
and different things. And we had people come in to watch these films, and he would show some of the films that he had made. And if he needed a soundtrack to those, we would supply the audience with different tambourines and drums and things to rattle, and they would perform as they watched the film, and we'd record it.
Okay.
We were doing things like that. We did this, but that was around the same time, and we played, Tav and the Burnettes played at this little club that had kind of just popped up on Madison and run by this woman, and we did a set. We had my friend Mary Pretorius read her poetry, and it was, this woman just did not like it at all. She just hated what was going on, you know, and right in the middle of our set, she came up and she pulled our plug, and she plugged her jukebox in, and it was Foreigner, Hot-Blooded, really loud. And we were just like, oh, my God. So we had got the plug pulled on us. Oh,
well, the Panther Barns are known for polarizing audiences. Some people really love it. Some people really don't like it.
No. But right around that time, you know, since Lisa and I had already performed together, I met a woman named Diane Green at the Antenna Club, and I knew she was part of that whole Art Academy scene, and she was playing in a band called the Odd Jobs, and I was like, hey, you want to start a band? So that's kind of how it all started.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Tav is already kind of grooming you to be a front person. I mean, this is just from the outside. I was observing this from a distance.
I groomed him.
Okay. All right. All right.
So, if you think that how the world we knew, the song, mm-hmm. it's a very hard song to sing.
Uh-huh.
I was his vocal coach on that.
Okay. Yes, no, it's a challenging Frank Sinatra number. Has yeah. a lot of chord changes, a big melody that moves all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Renee, I think I had a mind of my own.
Oh, no, I, of course you did. But Tav always had this unique vision that I think we all benefited from.
Yes, he turned me on to a lot of things that influenced me. Yeah.
Right.
One of the things that really influenced me was his record collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going through it and listening to a lot of this North Mississippi country blues style, stuff like Fred McDowell and Jack Owens. And I started, and he showed me how to tune my guitar into open.
Okay.
And
now, had
I,
you been playing guitar before being around the Panther Burns?
No, I was. My grandmother was a piano teacher, so I had some training in piano, and I played flute and piccolo in high school band.
Uh-huh.
So I had this flute, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go trade it for an electric guitar at the local, you know, guitar store.
Uh-huh.
And I came back with a Gibson Challenger
All
guitar.
Right.
And so I started, she gave me a slide, you know, and he showed me some things on slide. And I started trying to play along with the records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Patrick Matey was in town, who knew Rose Records. And he'd come to talk to Panther Burns, to talk to Tav. And I met him and I said, oh, let me play you this song, Special Rider.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it for him. And he was like, he was intrigued.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I'm very interested to put the Hellcats out. Yeah. In his French accent.
Right.
So that's how that happened. Yeah.
Right. Well, I remember the night that Hellcats are developing. You're getting your lineup together, working on material, working mm-hmm. on vocals and all that, and playing gigs with Panther Burns on some double bills, different places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you guys really weren't traveling, I don't think, at that point, playing much outside of Memphis, maybe except for a few gigs here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember the night that it was a big show with Panther Burns and the Hellcats, and some not at the Antenna Club. It might have been one of these lofts
mm-hmm.
somewhere. But Patrick was in town, and the Hellcats played a fantastic set, and you had all the vocals happening, and 3-part harmonies, and everybody there, and I remember just like, okay, these girls are gonna get a record deal. They're gonna. And you did. Patrick was over the moon hearing
yeah.
the full thing
yeah.
Realized.
Yeah.
And So I guess that's kind of the run up to y'all making your first record, which was Cherry Mansions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how did you do that? Where did you record that? Was that at Phillips Recording or?
No, we were over at Easley Studios when it was still in his backyard.
Okay, so that's again, Memphis is a very interconnected town, and the Pantherverse is very, very interconnected, even more so. So that's your sister is married to
Doug
Easley.
Doug Easley.
Right.
And Doug's partner, Davis McCain, too, which became Easley McCain Studio.
Right.
But in the backyard, he had built a studio, we had already recorded two songs that went on a Australian compilation. We wrote a song called Wall of Death.
Ah, yeah.
And that's when we first performed live at the Antenna Club. And this song, Wall of Death, is about the Wall of Death, which is a big circular barrel that motorcycle riders can do the stunt where they can circle around and go to the top if you get going fast enough.
It's like a circus sideshow act, right?
And Diane and I, she put together the words about these two lovers that were motorcycle riders. It was called Wall of Death. It was real grungy, swampy stuff. And we performed that at the Antenna Club before the Panther Burns, and we had her boyfriend at the time bring his motorcycle in and park it. He was on the dance floor. And so at the end of the song, Diane finished it, big ending, and she jumped off the stage and jumped on the motorcycle and behind him, and they rode off out the side door.
Oh, okay.
Of course, it smoked the club up.
Right,
all
right.
These fumes.
Nobody could breathe.
Coughing, yeah. So that was our big start, yeah.
Okay.
And then, so when we started, we recorded that at Easley, in the backyard studio. So Cherry Mansions was recorded in the backyard, too, at that studio.
And that wound up being a very popular studio. You had, at that location, and I guess they had another location after that.
Right. Now, the second location was over on Diedrich Street in Memphis there, and it was a bigger studio. I forget the history of it. It was American Studios before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, man.
Yeah, and so it was a great place. I did a lot of all my stuff from the 90s came out of there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you're on New Rose Records. You record that first LP. I can't remember exactly the timeline, but I was never on the Panther Burns when the Hellcats were touring with the Panther Burns.
You missed it.
Yeah. Well, I heard stories.
Yeah.
I think I might have seen that Cobill in New Orleans at some point after I was already in the Iguanas, I believe,
yeah.
Is the early days of that. I saw y'all at the CAC, the Contemporary Arts Center here.
Oh, yeah.
That was a very fun night. I know that you guys did like this Cobill tour all around the country, huh?
Yeah, we did. We went out to California, I think, twice.
Right.
Went up to the Northeast in New York City. And
right. Now, when you were in California, I think there was like some time you would stay there for weeks at a time and play one or two gigs a week. Somehow you're staying at a mutual friend's house. We won't have to name any names, but this person, I remember complaining to me because he knew I knew everybody. And this was when George was on the band. And,
yeah.
And, I'm not sure who else was in the band at that time, but he was saying, yeah, man, these guys, they're just hanging around all the time. And then the day of the show, everybody takes a shower. And the whole house is steamed up.
Yeah.
And it's just a mess. I can't get in there.
I can't imagine how we left those places when we finally pulled out, you know.
Well, you know, the Panther Burns, it it trained me early on to be able to fend for yourself, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And I remember one time we were, you might have been on this trip. I can't remember. We were in Chicago or something, and you and Tav, or Tav was staying with somebody, and me and Brent and George wound up finding this other guy who said he would put us up for the night. And he put us up, you know, sleeping on the floor, and he left for work in the morning, and he thought we were supposed to leave. And then sometime during the day, Tav goes, yeah, well, you know, we got a place to stay here. And I was like, well, this guy doesn't want to stay in here. He goes, well, it's too bad for him. So he goes, let's stay another day. So then the guy comes home and he's like, you guys are still here? I'm like, yeah, I got some bad news, man. We're staying tonight. He's like, I didn't want that. That's not what I was like. Hey, man.
Yeah, you know, it's what
like,
can you do?
It's like vampires. Once you invite us in, it's on you, you know?
Oh, I know. Well, on these tours, you know, a lot of times some of the members of Panther Burns required certain standards of where they stayed, and they were agreed to before the tour started.
Oh, okay.
There was a certain amount of money that had to be, you know, paid, or you know, certain standard of hotel. Well, that didn't apply to all of us. Certain ones.
Well, you try to get that. You try to enforce those things, but you know, once you're out there on the road, it's hard to make all that happen. You know, you do have to make do.
There might be a hotel room, you know, where a bass player is staying, and Tab would take the other bed, right, in the nice hotel. Hellcats are looking for the Motel 6 at $12 a night,
right,
where the door won't even lock. Okay, or sleeping on someone's couch, you know.
Sure.
So yeah,
well, it's called paying dues, baby.
Yeah. I paid them.
Now, the Hellcats was kind of a bit of a volatile lineup as well. You had people coming in and out of the band, right?
Yeah, we've had different members. There's been just a core group, though, that I feel that's core. That's Lisa and myself and Diane and Misty and Sue.
Right.
Not my sister Sue, but another young woman who played keyboards.
Right. Now, I remember Misty. I'd met Misty real early on in my time in Memphis. Mm-hmm. You guys were friends before you ever met the Panther Burns, right?
Yeah.
So she kind of came in tow, you know.
Yeah.
And Misty's one of these people that knows everybody.
Yep.
You can. I've been other cities, and I start telling a story, and they go, oh, I know Misty.
Yeah.
Like, for no good reason, just because she's just one of those people. But she somehow insinuated herself in as a tambourine player initially. And I remember thinking, man, that girl can't play. She can't keep time to save her life with that tambourine. Jesus Christ, man. But she'd, you know, play along. At some point, whoever was playing drums, did you have a male drummer at one time in the band? I can't recall, but
this was a tour we were doing a tour. We got up to Chicago. And Tab's car broke down. And
a likely story.
The Hellcats, we were with the, you know, Hellcats and Panther Burns, the Chicago's. I think we played the show and the car broke down. It was going to be a week before it was done. So our drummer at that time, which I won't mention his name.
Okay.
Apparently, we didn't know where he went.
Uh-huh.
He disappeared. We couldn't find him.
AWOL.
He went AWOL. It turned out he got real sick and had to go home,
okay.
But he didn't tell anyone. So we didn't know where the drummer was. So Misty, Tav is like, Misty, you're going to have to play drums at the next show.
Uh-huh.
She was like, what?
Now,
so it was my job to stand next to her and play that snare drum that I was so good at because I had trained for years and years.
Right.
To lead her through the stops.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what we did.
Well, so the next time I see the band with Misty playing drums, I'm like, how the fuck can this girl not play tambourine, but she can play drums really cool? It's like maybe she didn't have enough stuff to do with the tambourine.
She was
a
very enthusiastic tambourine player, and being out front, and that really, you know, she likes to shine.
Okay.
Misty shines.
Right, right. Misty wound up being a terrific drummer, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a good podcast. Anybody can look up Misty White and do a search for that on the Troubled Men podcast, and you can find her episode. Mm-hmm. Misty's over in France now.
Yeah, she's still recording. She's recording, playing shows over there. Right. She's been over. We played in Memphis this year as a reunion of the Zip and Pippin Band.
Yes, yeah.
Brought out a lot of people. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you know, we also had Amy Levere on the podcast.
And yeah.
I know it's again, so funny. I knew Amy. I know her through Will Sexton. Mm-hmm. And she's been a friend for a while. And it was only when I was doing preparation for for her appearance on the podcast when I discovered a videotape of the Zip and Pippins and the White Sisters and you and Amy. I'm like, holy fuck, man. This is, of course, I should have figured, but still, it was a surprise.
Yeah. Amy was in the Zip and Pippins, and I got to play with her. Just so much fun. And her and Will, they tour so much, and they're playing really great places, and they're playing a lot in Memphis at Hernando's Hideaway.
Right.
And they're so good. And
yeah, I love those guys.
So hardworking.
Yeah. They're both fantastic songwriters and performers, and yeah, they're a great couple.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the Misty and the band playing drums, and was Misty playing drums in the Panther Burns on that tour as well?
That tour with that drummer in AWOL, she finished the tour out. Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, a lot of more shows.
Nothing can stop the Panther Burns.
Yeah, the train kept a rolling, right?
That's right. Well, you're here in town playing with this big bill of Panther Burn, associated or Alex. Well, tell us who's playing on the tour. I mean, this isn't going to come out till well after this, but y'all are playing a number of dates with this bill around, huh?
Yeah, we just played Memphis last weekend. We're all friends. And there's four bands on the bill. There's my new band that put together this year, and I've got all new songs, all new original songs. There was a couple from the 90s. And so we're playing, and then Coco, the Marquis de Coconut, who was in a band called Lolitas, a Berlin band back in the 80s and 90s, who came to Memphis, and Alex Chilton produced one of their records.
Okay.
So he's here with his banjo, playing a lot of different, French, Cajun, German songs. And then a soul band from Memphis called the Dough Rollers, who are my backup band.
Oh, all right.
And then Dear France, which is Kai Eric, who, as you know, you've played with him. Is
right,
Burn.
So... Well, yes, I was going to bring
player.
Up, yes, Kai was bass player in Panther Burns after my tenure, or sometimes in the middle of my tenure when Alex and I would go out to do solo dates.
Mm-hmm.
Kai would come in, fill in for me, and play tours and stuff, and I even remember a tour where we were all over in Europe playing, and I'd agreed to a certain amount of, I don't know, 2 weeks of dates or something, like 3 weeks of dates. And as the thing rolled on, more dates were being added. I'm like, well, I can't do all those dates. And
yeah.
Like, well, you have to do all these dates. It's like, no, I can't. I have other commitments. I have stuff to do. And so in that, I think Kai wound up coming over from New York, playing bass in the band for the rest of that tour. And God knows how long that tour lasted.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Kai since the very early 80s, and to reconnect with him in the last few weeks, he's introduced me to Dear France. They play together. They have the rest of the band's back in New York, but they've come here. Dear France, she's a woman that has such a rich history of rock and roll. She was all in the CBGB scene. She was a singer with John Cale and Tom Verlaine. She even sang with Bowie. And her music is beautiful, and it's rock and roll. And so they've joined on this tour, and we're sharing the same backup band.
Okay.
And so that's the fourth band on the bill, and
right.
I think they're the headliners. So that's, I just feel kind of in awe of Dear France, because she, to me, she's the real thing. She's the royalty to me.
Okay, yeah. Very cool. Well, I can't wait for the show tonight. It's going to be a blast, and it'll be one of those nights that pulls everybody out of the woodwork, you know, all the old Pantherburn affiliated people. And, you know, you look at the list of people who have been in the Pantherburns. I was like, I don't know, five or six from the start. And then, but the list goes on like, you know, like 100 people beyond that. It's crazy how the Panther army has,
the,
you know,
army.
Legions. Well, so I was bringing up Kai because, then after I was like not playing with the band live at all, I think I was down here with the Pantherburns, y'all continued to tour. George was still in the band, George Reinecke,
yep. Mm-hmm.
George the Max for New Orleans people, still in the band. At some point, y'all go to Australia. You're in Australia for a long time.
Yeah, we went to Australia two times.
Okay.
First time I've ever been on an airplane. It was to Australia.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And we had a blast there. It was great. We played in Sydney. We played in Melbourne. We played in Byron Bay. Kai, I mean, at one point, Kai and George had these big hair wigs, and we were hanging out with some motorcycle club, and the motorcycle club stole their wigs and tied them onto the back of their motorcycles and ran over them and ran all over town with these wigs stuck under the tires. And it was a good time.
All right. Yeah, things get crazy down there in Australia.
Yeah.
Well, I know there was a lot of dope down there in Australia at this time, too. I'm sure, you know, George was availing himself of that.
It was some dope smoking, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, so you could keep it PG here. Well, maybe we should take a little break here, and we can come right back, and we'll talk a little bit more.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Back. I am Renee Coleman, back with my guest, Miss Laurette Velvet. Now, Laurette, I know you're new to the podcast, but for all of our listeners out there, remind them that the Feral Zone, like the Troubled Men podcast, are a listener-supported operation. And to that end, we have a PayPal link and a Venmo link in the show notes of every show. And also we have a link to our Patreon page if you want to jump on there and be a supporter week in and week out. Get involved in that. Also, we have the link for the Troubled Men podcast t-shirts. You can clothe your family in, give them as gifts. Gifts giving season's right around the corner. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to us. Give us 5 stars. Costs you nothing. Helps us a lot. And if you want to find any Iguanas shows coming up, have a bunch of things going on. The link is there, the Iguanas dates, and you can go to my Renee Coleman Facebook page and see any of my independent dates with other groups that are going on. Back to our guest, Miss Laurette Velvet. Now, when we last left, the Panther Burns were in Australia. You come back. I can't exactly remember. I was just down in New Orleans, not spending much time in Memphis, although I would occasionally be tapped to do something here or there with the Panther Burns. You know, it's like the Marines or the Mafia. Yeah. You know, there's only one way out. That's death, you know.
Yeah.
if you're alive, you could be reactivated at a moment's notice.
Yeah, send the secret signal to Renee.
Right. Well, and Kai, just in the break, we were talking about how he got when I was leaving the tour in Germany, as it got extended more and more, he got a call, and Tav said, Kai, you have to come over and play bass with us. And he said, well, when? And he said, tomorrow. He's like, okay, I guess. So you're back in the States. The Hellcats record a second record. At some point, that band kind of runs its course. I don't know exactly what went on, but you had a good run.
Yeah, we did. We did a record called Hoodoo Train.
Right.
And I had offerings from all three singers. Lisa was a singer. I was, and so was Diane. And so we kind of equally shared on the vocal performances. And so a lot of good songs on that. And recently, one of the most incredible events that's been really, really moving to me was in Memphis, there's a great organization called the Memphis Listening Lab, mm-hmm. and it's at Crosstown Concourse. And it's a nonprofit, but it started as the collection of a Memphian, Mr. King. I forget his first name offhand, but it was his record collection. And so they have a room, or several rooms, with records and CDs and photographs on the wall of all the greats from Memphis music. And you can go, and there's record players. You can go in, you can listen to anything they have. And you can also go into a special room with nice cozy couches and listen to it on the Eggleston speakers.
Oh, okay.
Boom, 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 boom.
Cool.
And they threw an event for us. It was a listening party for Hoodoo Train, and all the Hellcats were there. It was sold out.
Nice.
We were up front. We did interviews with Robert Gordon and Greg Cartwright, and then the audience broke up in half, and half went into the really intimate listening room. The other half stayed in the big room and listened. But just being in that small room with, you know, 60 other people, and everyone had their eyes shut and their heads back, and they weren't asleep.
Right,
they
sure.
were listening.
Sure.
And to listen to that side of that record so closely, and it just really, it was one of the highlights that I've had, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really great. It was really, so, you know, when you make something, when you look back on it a year later or 5 years later, you often feel a little bit cringy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you let it season over decades,
right.
And then when you listen back, you're like, okay, that wasn't that bad. It was actually pretty cool.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It's a gratifying feeling to listen to something all that time later and feel like, yeah, that holds up better than I would have expected, you know.
Yeah.
The reality surpasses my memories of it.
In the real highlight of that side, I forget what side we listened to in that small room, and was Lisa singing When You Walk in the Room.
Mm-hmm.
It just was so, her voice is so beautiful and pure, and just to hear her sing those lyrics and the play the guitar on that, it was just that was the highlight for me on that side.
Right on.
Yeah.
At some point, you start a band with your old buddy Misty White, Alluring Strange.
Yes. Well, you know, Alluring Strange, I got pulled into.
Okay.
So Misty, they were doing some playing together with her sister Christy and Sue Ondine. She was in the Hellcats, and I'd taken off up to New York in the early 90s. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Alluring Strange, is that the band that played all Neil Diamond songs?
They weren't all Neil Diamonds. Okay. But Misty's a big Neil Diamond.
Okay, but
fan.
It was heavy on the Neil Diamond material.
And either were two.
Oh, okay. All
and,
right.
So when I got back, early 90s, I got pulled in to, do you want to play with Alluring Strange? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. And especially since we're going to record, we got a record deal to do a recording. It's called Will You Marry Me? That's the name of the record. Mm-hmm. And we did a whole record. That listening to that, too, was like, wow, that sounds pretty good, you know?
Right. Now, when you're talking about your time in New York, I know you played with this band, the Kropotkins,
mm-hmm.
And made three records with that band or something?
Yeah, I think we're missing a big chunk before we get to the Kropotkins.
Okay.
The early 90s saw me, like, I was up in New York hanging with Dan Rose, a filmmaker and video maker and good friend of mine who lives here now, hanging out with him, trying, you know. I was up there just seeing what I could get into.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. He said, you know, you should make a new record. You know, you're done with the Hellcats. You know, you should do something on your own. I bet Chilton would produce it. I said, really? No. Really? He's like, yeah, why don't you call him? I'll get his number. So I just out of the blue, I called him. Hey, it's Lorette.
Uh-huh.
Would you want to make a record? I got some ideas. He's like, yeah. So I ended up going back to Memphis. He supplied me with some drums, a bass, and he gave me he brought over his four track. He left all that stuff with me, and I did some demos. So we ended up going in the studio at Davis McCain, and we did this record called White Birds. And so that's when Veracity got more involved with putting my records out. And after that, we did several more. Not with Chilton, but several other, recordings that were released through Veracity. We went on tour in Germany a lot. I went either playing solo or I went with a whole band.
Uh-huh.
And Alex Green in my band, my best friend Melissa Dawn, Doug Easley, my brother-in-law went, Scott Bomar went, Kurt Ruhlman, Ken Woodley went at one point. So we did several tours through the 90s.
Okay.
And then the Kropotkins came in toward the end of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so now you mentioned Alex Green.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the last record, that last proper Panther Burn record that I played with right as I was starting to work with the Iguanas down here was Return of the Blue Panther. And Alex Green played some keyboards on that, and that's the first time I'd met him. Now, Alex winds up playing in the Panther Burns, like, more at that point. Now, at some point, you and Alex wind up getting married, right?
Yeah, we got married in 1999.
Oh, okay, so yeah. This is after the Kropotkins, even?
Yeah, so we were good friends, you know, and we wrote a few songs together, and he was dating Melissa, I was dating Kurt, and that was fine, but toward the end of all that, things kind of changed around.
Uh-huh. This is a very Memphian story, you know? Everybody used to date everybody else.
I mean, yeah, you can date more than one person in your band.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not at the same time.
Well, you could do that, too.
Sure.
No, but I think how Dave Soldier of the Kropotkins, Dave lives up in New York, he saw me play at a show opening up for Otha Turner's Rising Star Fife and Drum Band.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Gorries were on that too. So he saw me, and he didn't meet me that night, but he wanted to meet me. So he was down in Memphis, and he said, I've got to find her, you know. So he was at a restaurant downtown, and he said, do you know Lorette Velvet, to the waiter? He's like, yeah, I know her.
This is in Memphis?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that waiter called me and said, this is Guy looking for you. Okay. So I talked to him, you know. So Dave wanted to put a band together. So are you familiar with Dave's work?
I'm really not.
He's actually Dr. Dave Sulzer, and he's a neurobiologist at Columbia.
Okay.
But he's a musician and composer and songwriter and a multi-instrumentalist. And I'm sure he's a writer. He's everything.
Right.
And he's been involved in so many projects. He was Soldier String Quartet with John Cale.
Okay.
And he's done things like record with the Thai elephants in Thailand, where they made these huge instruments that the elephants could play.
Okay.
I mean, it's just wild the amount of things he's done. But he said, you know, hey, I saw your show. I want to put a band together. Are you interested? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he sent me some crazy material. I said, this is too avant-garde for me. But I ended up doing it. And it's kind of like a turn-of-the-century marching fife and drum band in a way that there's marching snare, stand-up bass drum, slide blues guitar, fiddle, and banjo.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the Kropotkins.
Right. But and at some point, Maureen Tucker from the Velvet Underground was his drummer, huh?
Mo was on a record.
Okay.
And so I met Mo, and we did some songs together. She sang a couple of songs. I harmonized with her. Her brother is a poet. She used one of his poems on a song, and we did some Knitting Factory shows, and we hung out to the sun rose, and talked all night long. It was a lot of fun.
I'll bet. Mm-hmm. Man, the places that the Panther Burn, I mean, I always think not that all of this is flowing from that, but kind of in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of, gives you a grounding, gives you a point of view. And, Tav is someone who he's done nothing but grow in my esteem of him. I have so much admiration for, because when I first met him, I was like, this is, I don't know. I don't know if I can take this seriously it's...
Don't take it too seriously.
but yet the totality of the output over all this time is overwhelming. If you think, God, man, to have produced art in all these different media, and to be continuing to this day, the films, Uranus,
right, still doing it,
Urania trilogy.
Well, Tav has been the spark of a lot of different creative things that have happened to people. And that's been either it's been a wildfire or it's been a smoldering slow burn, but he's been the spark,
right?
Really has.
And I feel like in my own artistic musical development that I think this might have surprised Tav that I still have such an affinity. Because when I had him on the podcast and I was kind of telling him this, he's like, "Wow, Renee, really?" I mean, where I was like, "No, it's I use things that I learned in the Panther Burns or artistic approaches, concepts that were developed during that time. I've used the whole rest of my career."
Well, Tav and my grandmother, who was the piano teacher, they're very much alike because my grandmother said the most important thing about when you're about to do your recital, your piano recital, she said, "Now, if you mess up, don't stop, because the audience will never know if you just keep going."
Well,
and so, I mean, that's the motto for Tav.
Sure,
when
sure.
you fuck up, just keep going.
Well, that's
cover your tracks.
That's the motto for anybody performing. Yeah, that's
roll on, right?
Sure. But beyond that, just the curiosity, the drive to do whatever the next thing is, the kind of a fearlessness about, well, we'll figure this out. I just have an inclination, a hunch, or a guess of that this might turn into something. Let's see.
Yes, is the heads roll behind you.
So you're in the Kropotkins. You make, like I said, three records with that band, and so at some point you come back to Memphis from New York.
No.
How
I had been in New York the first of the '90s. I was back in Memphis, all through the '90s, really traveling back and forth to New York, here and there, but. My music started kind of coming to a halt toward the end of the 90s because my record label in Germany went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was really time, things were changing for me, and Alex and I got together, and and started our love affair, and which evolved into getting married and having two really great kids, and buying a farm and becoming farmers, and and growing organic vegetables and selling at market, and still trying to play music here and there, but not as much as we'd like. Sometimes we'd go up to New York and play with the Kropotkins a little bit, you know. And so we did that up until the kids, we homeschooled them up until middle school age, around 2013, and we moved back to Memphis. We gave up farming, moved back to Memphis. Alex really wanted to get back into music. He's a really, really talented person, and needs that creative output, and he's doing great things still today. And
right, great keyboard player, great guitar player, great writer, PhD in what, anthropology, or something. he embarrasses me with his accomplishments.
Yeah,
and I guess he's currently the music editor for the Memphis Flyer magazine.
Yeah, he's really super talented, and so we got back in. He got back into playing music. So things evolved, you know. We hit the 2020, and my kids were getting ready to go off to college, you know. And that's a hard time for parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents and everything when those kids, you know, go off on their own.
Sure.
It takes a while to get adjusted to it. And for me, it took me a couple of years.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I'll get right back into writing songs, get back into music. But nothing was coming very easily up until about last year.
Okay.
When I started writing songs again and pulled together 13 brand new songs and got a new band together and have been playing since last year.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, I did recently come across a collection of your like B-sides and singles and stuff. I guess you've put out a couple of those. The first one back in 2000 being Rude Angel.
Mm-hmm.
But then yesterday I was listening to Don't Crowd Your Mind.
Uh-huh.
And I love that record. It's so rocking.
Yeah, I love that. That's a group of songs from the 90s recordings, and it was put out on a French label called Monotone. That was around 2018, possibly. And it's got a lot of good songs. It's got Boys Keep Swinging, the Bowie's.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bowie's cover, which is my favorite
I love that recording.
Yeah,
yeah. And then you do a cover of the T-Rex song, 20th Century Boy.
Yeah.
And Alex played on a bunch of that. Alex Chilton, rather, played on some of those sides, or produced some of those sides. And
I guess is Eager Boy on that one?
I can't recall, but I know I think Alex Green, plays on a bunch of it, maybe Dickinson is on. Jim Dickinson is on a track
who's
or two.
On that? It's not Jim. It's Lee Baker.
Lee Baker
is on Oh How It Rained. He's playing the Resonator. On that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great guitar player from Mudboy and the Neutrons and a million other recordings. Mm-hmm. Legendary Memphis guitar player.
Yeah, that one's out on Bandcamp, but all the rest of the stuff is unavailable.
Okay.
Occasional, you know, you can get it secondhand.
Right.
But I'm just sitting on all this. I've got all these, we've got all the Hellcat stuff. We've got all the Lorette stuff from the 90s. And it was never released in the U.S.,
well, you know,
so
nobody has heard
it.
You should put all that stuff on Bandcamp.
You know, I'm holding on to it, hoping that somebody will want to put out a box set.
Oh, all right. Okay.
And I don't know whether to put it out there on streaming. I feel like it's giving it away. I feel like I need to hold on to it a little bit longer since I'm starting to play again.
Right. Well,
that maybe I can drum up some interest.
Sure. Well, I would say you don't have to put it on free streaming like Spotify or stuff. Just put it on Bandcamp where people can at least purchase it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just an idea.
I think I'm going to release a little bit at a time on my stuff. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. You know, the Panther Burns, it's always the scarcity is its own.
Yeah,
it creates your own value.
The allure of it.
That's right. That's right. Play coy. Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
Well, man, it's so great catching up with you.
Yeah, it was a blast.
So you have new music that you're playing tonight, new music that you're going to be recording at some point here.
Yeah,
so.
I've got two songs in the can right now. Going to mix them soon. But, yeah, this stuff is a little different. It's I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of like a punky Americana, but a lot of weirdness thrown in, and there's some murder ballads / recipes.
Murder recipes.
Yeah, there's some murder recipes in
nice.
There.
Well, we have a few independent record label owners who are out there. They're fans of. They're in the Troubled Nation. They're fans of the Feral Zone. So perhaps they'll will spark something in their imagination. And
I hope so. Yeah.
Well, I think I should let you go. You have a show to do tonight. Thank you so much for coming and doing the podcast in advance of you having to perform. It's you're a tireless artist who is giving it to the people. So
I'm gonna march on.
Right on.
And I thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely, it's been a real pleasure and such a I have such fond memories of our time together and here we are still.
I know we're still kicking.
Yep. For the Feral Zone, I am Renee Coleman. For our guest, Miss Lorette Velvet, signing off. Good night.